Welcome to the Scape Foo Podcast, where it's all about learning to make aquariums beautiful. And now, here are your hosts, Scape Foo founder and chief bottle washer, Art Pinom, your DIY homescaper, JJ, and our full-time aquascaper and smarty pants from Germany, Yuri's Mitt JS.
Hello, hello. This is Art Pinom, just me today. We're still trying to coordinate the other two hosts, Yuri's and JJ, to come on and have a good discussion. But today you're going to hear me solo. Welcome. Thank you for listening. This is the Scape Foo Podcast. This is episode 46 already of the podcast. We are the only podcast on the internet dedicated to making your aquariums beautiful. It's aquascaping. It's planted aquariums. And anything and everything related to those. So welcome. Good to have you listening. If you have not already done so, you could be listening to me from the Scape Foo app. Just go to the App Store if you're doing iOS or the Google Play Store, I think it's called if you're on Android. Type in Scape Foo and the app will pop up. There's the two versions, and it's the best way for you to listen to this podcast while also helping us out to cover the cost of bringing this to you. Now, today, I want to have a less structured, but I think interesting, out-of-the-box type of thinking for our aquarium. And the topic I want to cover is the use of organic carbon to maintain a planted aquarium. I know it sounds geeky, technical, and whatnot, but bear with me. Here's what I'm thinking. Many of you come to me asking, how do I set up a planted aquarium? How do I keep my plants from melting, etc.? And if you've been reading Scape Foo recently, you know that I've been covering a series called the Introduction to Aquarium Plants Tutorial, which covers the golden equilibrium. Part of the golden equilibrium is providing carbon, CO2, to your plants. So what you want to do is maintain light, fertilizer, and CO2 in the right balance of each for your particular aquarium. That makes your plants grow healthy and stable. The problem you guys are having, some of you are having, is you're new. You may not have the budget for pressurized CO2 just yet. You may not be interested in having pressurized CO2. I know some out there, I know I went through with it when I had young children. I'm concerned about having a pressurized cylinder in the house where it could get tipped over or messed around with. Many reasons. I know some of you are into different styles of planted aquariums, such as the El Natural by Diana Wallstad, which is a natural approach to it. Others used all sorts of dirted tanks, mineralized soil tanks, etc., where pressurized CO2 may not always be used. So if pressurized CO2 cannot be used, and we know that our plants need CO2, to grow healthy, what are the alternatives? Well, you've heard the yeast CO2 generator. For me, it's a cheap way of adding carbon dioxide, and it's just essentially sugar and yeast. The yeast grows a byproduct of the yeast growing. You know, they emit carbon dioxide, just like you and me, and that is funneled into your aquarium. It's very unstable. It takes work. They have been known to blow up. Now, obviously not with the intensity of a pressurized CO2 cylinder, but enough to get all over everything when they do go. And if you are not diligent in properly refilling those, it becomes a problem because your tank runs out of CO2. So, what else could we do? I think in various books, and I know in Diana's book, we have been told that, well, and I actually, as a quick aside, I'll put a link in the show notes to the CO2 article that I wrote about in the aquarium plants tutorial. CO2 gets into our aquariums through various ways, right? One is the air interchange with the water column. It's a very slow, really not very effective way of getting CO2 in there by agitating the top of the water column. Fish food decomposing, so bacteria capturing that, and they, like us, emit CO2 as part of respiration. Fish poop, fish respiration. But in the normal aquarium, where you're doing what you're supposed to, which is cleaning, water changes, you're not overfeeding, you don't have it overstocked, that way of adding CO2 is difficult, because to get there, you need to have sufficient quantity of X to put enough CO2 out there that it meets your plant's needs. So that's difficult. You're going to overstock your tank. That may not be appropriate. Are you not going to do water changes? You're just going to let it go and everything decompose, and hopefully you will use that to try and drive up your CO2 production by bacterial population. That looks unsightly. It's hard to control, has other negative issues. So how do you do it if you're looking for a way that doesn't include carbon dioxide, either sugar, yeast, or pressurized? And here's where carbon dosing comes into effect. Let me tell you where I got the idea. It is very common in the marine aquariums and saltwater aquariums to dose a sugar, vodka, vinegar, a carbon source into the water column, increasing bacterial populations. Why? Why do they do that? Well, let's think about it. When we add a carbon source, carbon is a fuel source. It's food for heterotrophic bacteria. And so these heterotrophic bacteria grow very quickly. There's some studies that show that even in 15 minutes, they can double the population. So what happens when they're growing? Well, they need more food, which means they take up more nutrients, kind of like our plants. These nutrients are nitrate, phosphate. They get trapped in the organism of the bacteria. And reef aquariums, marine aquariums, have these things called skimmers, protein skimmers. And what ends up happening is that these skimmers skim out this additional bacteria that now holds a lot of nitrogen and phosphate in there and takes it out of the marine aquarium. So it is a way of evacuating nitrogen and phosphate from marine aquariums, which is a good thing for them. They want to keep very low concentrations of those two nutrients in there for their corals, etc. Us, on the other hand, we like a nitrogen source. It's food for our plants. We like a phosphorus source. It's food for our plants. We maintain pHs that are below 7 by and large. I maintain mine at 6.3 or thereabouts. And in that level of pH, ammonia is in the form of ammonium, a much less harmful form for our organisms and a very usable form for our plants. They're able to assimilate it very quickly without having to exert any energy of converting nitrogen back up into ammonia, ammonium into, so that they use it in their growth. So we're a little different than the freshwater side than the saltwater side. We don't have protein skimmers. They don't work well if you don't have the density that the saltwater has. So why would we use it? Well, let's think about what would happen. And then I'm going to give you my personal story with it and how I kind of tripped up on this. what ends up happening is we dose carbon, we increase bacterial populations, heterotrophic bacterial populations. There are studies showing that when you increase, you provide a carbon source and you really increase, pump up bacterial activity in your aquarium, heterotrophic bacteria are going to outcompete nitrifying bacteria, which is the one we typically know about, which is the bacteria that takes ammonia into nitrite, into nitrate, and reducing the toxicity of it. That's how we've learned the nitrogen cycle, et cetera. Those get outcompeted. So you would expect that population to go down, heterotrophic population to go up. Now, they also do some denitrification, but not to the extent or stability that the nitrifying ones do. So the nitrifying's being autotrophic. I think I'm getting into a little bit too much detail here. I don't want to bore you guys or lose you, but what ends up happening is one type of bacteria grows. It feeds on organic carbon in the aquarium and starts to release byproducts. What are those byproducts? Well, it releases carbon dioxide. Good thing. It sucks up organics. Good thing. It decreases my nitrifying bacteria, which means that my nitrogen cycle goes down, which means I will have more ammonia in the aquarium, but I have a pH below 7, so it's more ammonium. My plants love ammonium, so good thing. I'm not so concerned about nitrifying bacteria going down. There are studies that show, and my observational experience confirms, that when you have a filter in the aquarium, this increasing population of bacteria will congregate in the easily available space in your filter, as opposed to all over the sides, the glass of your aquarium. That bacterial film that is created when you have high population of bacteria doesn't really happen if you have a good enough filter where they can colonize. And I'll put a link to a study that showed that as well. And it's been my experience just simply from observation. So end result is I've increased carbon dioxide in the aquarium output because of increased bacteria. Nitrification has gone down, but I don't care because I like ammonia. And I don't need bacteria to break it down to nitrite, which would be toxic to my aquarium, my fish. Oxygen will go down because of the increased respiration of bacteria, and that is an issue in the aquarium that I'll mention in a second here for you or to you. I run an air stone at night, so I have plants in the day that are photosynthesizing, putting oxygen out, maintaining appropriate levels of oxygen in the aquarium. But at night, when I turn it off, I have a low fish population. I turn on an air stone at night. And Amano has done that on several occasions. We can debate back and forth whether it's necessary or not. I will tell you that in a carbon dosing scenario, it is necessary because the bacteria is also sucking up oxygen and you risk oxygen levels coming down to a point where they're not acceptable for life. So that is important. Other bacteria are also outcompeted when you have these heterotrophs growing. One in particular is cyanobacteria or blue-green algae that we sometimes have in our aquariums. So that goes away. Let me now switch over to my personal experience and how I started thinking about this a little bit more. Now, I'll stop right here and say, folks, this isn't something I'm telling you as, hey, fact. This is simply experimentation that I've been doing, research I've been doing, thinking I've been doing, and is a hypothesis, let's just say. Yet to be proven, yet to be scientifically tested. I don't have the time to run experiments. in any sort of scientific way. If you are out there and want to run one of these experiments or have experience with it, I'd love to hear about it, and maybe we can discuss how to go about doing it. But I think it's an interesting topic. Here's my experience. I have a tank that I have been struggling with cyanobacteria for, gosh, feels like forever. I don't know how I got it. Probably brought it in from one of the plants that I got shipped, and that started that aquarium. And traditionally, that aquarium, I would go through cycles. The cyanobacteria would bloom. Really, very little reasoning for it. I had all of my levels correct. My plants were doing well. I would hit it with erythromycin, the antibiotic, and that would knock it out in the period of a week. I would do all the maintenance necessary, suck it all out, all the dead bacteria out, gone. I would be a good couple of months cyano-free, and boom, lo and behold, it would come back after a while. I would hit it with erythromycin again, go away, and I would go through this cycle. And I started to become very concerned that, man, if this continues, this bacteria, whatever stays in there that I don't truly kill with the antibiotic, is going to become resistant to this thing, to erythromycin, and then what am I going to do? So I started to think about my old days as a reef aquarist and said, well, if it is bacteria, will it be limited if I have other types of bacteria growing and taking nutrients that it must be taking from the water? Just a hypothesis. I went online, I did a little research on it through Google. I pulled up one post by somebody who said, hey, I'm in a freshwater situation. I started dosing vodka and my cyano went away. Just one post. That was it. No scientific testing, nothing. So I said, you know what? Let me give it a shot now. He didn't have erythromycin. As some of you know, it's becoming harder and harder to find in the United States. So I started to dose vinegar. I had read that vodka in saltwater aquariums tends to promote cyanobacteria, but vinegar dosing did not. So for the heck of it, I started to dose every day a few milliliters of vinegar to this aquarium. And lo and behold, after about a month, I started to see the cyanobacteria dying away. I ran my usual routine of sucking it up, trying to clean it out as best I can, continued the dosing. After 2 months, it was completely gone. Completely gone. Now, I was probably dosing a very small amount for this larger aquarium, 60 gallons. Perhaps it had, if I had dosed more, maybe bacterial populations would have shot up faster and outcompeted the cyano, if in fact that is what happened. But I don't know. The only thing I know was cyanobacteria was not in the aquarium anymore. I had not used erythromycin. The only change I had done was started to dose vinegar. I did not notice any increasing dino populations. I didn't see biofilm on the top of the water column. I didn't see biofilm on the glass of the aquarium. I was running a canister filter with no organic removal substance such as activated carbon or C-Chem's material that removes dissolved organic compounds. It was straight up just bacterial filter, biological filter material in the canister filter in Eheim, which was a good size for the aquarium, is a good size for the aquarium. So there you have it. That was my initial experience. But then what happened? I went out on a extended vacation that lasted, gosh, almost 40 days. And I was gone for that period of time, and I left somebody to come to my house every day. mom. Thank you, mom. And I had the list for her to do. And it was, you know, put this, I use estimative index in fertilizer. On these days, those this amount, and I had little paper cinched up baggies with the right amount so she wouldn't even have to measure. And it just open this, drop it here on Tuesday. On Wednesday, drop the other one, that sort of thing. I told her to dose, continue dosing vinegar because I just wanted to make sure that I killed off any other cyanobacteria that's there. And I didn't see any negative repercussions, so I just continued it. So every day she continued to dose the vinegar. Everything else was the same. I made one mistake, though. I forgot to check my CO2 levels in my cylinder. And I am guesstimating that a few days to a week into my vacation, that cylinder ran empty and my aquarium stopped getting CO2. This is not a high energy aquarium. So I wasn't pumping up the lights and nutrients or whatever. It was a steady state energy, meaning I want the plants to be healthy. I want them to grow slowly. As some of you who know me, I'm very busy, unfortunately, with work and staying after trimming and doing those things constantly is a no-go for me at this point in time. So it was just your average running aquarium. I think like many of you would want to maintain just healthy plants, not particularly low CO2 plants such as Cryptocoryne or Anubias or Java fern or moss. It was just your everyday average stem plants. Yes, I have Anubias. Yes, I have, I think I had some Cryptocoryne, but nothing out of the ordinary. Also, to be fair, no HC. I had hair grass on the foreground or any high CO2 demanding plant. That you see in some of these high energy aquariums. Okay, just being fair, I'm trying to establish the picture here. Just your plain Jane, everyday planted aquarium. What ended up happening was that, of course, I would call periodically and ask, Mom, how does it look? Do you see the little tiny bubbles coming from here? Do you see that? Everything okay? Great. She quickly told me, you know, no, I don't see any bubbles coming out of the diffuser. And at that point, you know, head to smack my forehead saying, I forgot to fill the CO2. Oh boy. I wasn't going to make her figure out how to unscrew the regulator, go to the CO2 refill place and set it up. Forget it. Ain't happening. These plants are not getting CO2 until I get back. So that's what took place. And I was fully expecting that when I got home, I would have what normally happens whenever this has happened to me before. And I'm not ashamed to tell you it's happened to me many times before where I run out of CO2 or run out of this or run out of the other. When that imbalance happens of the golden equilibrium, I'm going to have algae. So typically it's a green pea soup when I get back. And I'll have various types of algae growing all over the place because the plants stopped getting one of the things they need. I am not concerned about that anymore after so many years in this hobby because I know I can turn it around in a month or so just by coming back to the maintenance. So I wasn't overly fussed. But, you know, 40 days went by. Wow, 40 days. 40 days and nights. Any of you religious out there? Anyway, wasn't that. It was almost 40 days. And I was definitely not in a desert. I was having a lot of fun. But anyway, I got back. And was stunned to see my aquarium looking fine. Water was crystal clear, no green soup. Algae was minimal at most. Cyano, nowhere to be seen. Fish, fine. I was stunned, really, honestly. What happened? That I was able to not put CO2 for so many days in here while still providing the same levels of nutrients and light, that algae didn't take over as it normally did. The only thing that I was able to conclude that was different from every other time was the vinegar dosing. So what have I concluded simply from this very unscientific, don't send me hate mail, I know it's unscientific, but the conclusion that I drew was this vodka dosing must have increased my bacterial population to a point where they are putting out sufficient carbon dioxide from their normal respiration that plants were able to maybe not have the same level of CO2 that they had before, but enough for them to not deteriorate and continue to outcompete algae. We talked about in the aquarium plants introduction to aquarium plants tutorial about CO2 being a range, that you don't have to hit 30 parts per million. It's a range. And what range? Well, that depends on your aquarium and the plants and all of the setup, and including the amount of bacteria you have in there putting out CO2, et cetera. So I'm sure that the CO2 levels were within the adequate range for my aquarium. And it's very fascinating to me that I was able to arrive at that range without pumping in CO2 by traditional means, pressurized in my case. Now, some of you chemists out there may also know that vinegar creates an acid. I think it's acetic acid, which quickly decomposes into CO2. Maybe that's adding CO2 as well. It does have a decreasing effect on pH. And in fact, I believe, if I recall correctly, Diana Wallstad in her Ecology of the Planted Aquarium mentioned that vinegar can be used to decrease pH. I did have during that period of time, a water change, 50% water change happening. I did make mom do that, but I have a python, so it was not hard, and she enjoyed it. At least that's what she tells me. So my only conclusion was the vinegar was working. So I continued. I did go refill it. Let me not lie. I did refill the CO2 canister, but I didn't turn it on. I continued with the vinegar for an additional 60 days with no adverse effect to that aquarium. I followed my normal routine. I did notice that my filter, when I cleaned it, and unlike many of you, I do take apart my canister filter on a weekly basis when I run my my routine. At most, I'll do it every 2 weeks if I can't 1 week for rinse outs and whatnot. I did notice that it was clogging up with gunk. I attribute it to be bacterial film or byproducts, but it was more than usual. But other than that, I did not notice any other negative adverse effects to the aquarium. So what I concluded after a while was I was getting a little tired of dosing every week, every day vinegar. And I had pressurized CO2, so I switched back to my pressurized CO2. That aquarium has no longer had cyanobacteria issues. I have not had to dose erythromycin or vinegar or anything else. But it was an interesting study for me, accidental as it was, to really think out of the box a little bit and say, you know what, maybe we're all concerned about something that we shouldn't be. And maybe this is an alternative for folks until they save up for a pressurized system or some other form of controlled CO2 addition. And I do feel that a controlled CO2 addition via pressurized CO2 system gives you many more options and much more flexibility, and would highly recommend it over dosing carbon or any other form. But as a preventative measure for cyanobacteria, or a eradication measure for cyanobacteria, and for those that don't have the option of pressurized CO2, I think carbon dosing in a freshwater situation, in a planted aquarium situation, in a low fish environment, with oxygen being pumped in, bubbled at night, may be a viable alternative. I've gone online and tried to really figure out if there's been any studies or any experience being put out there of vinegar dosing, carbon dosing for freshwater aquariums. And there's not a lot out there. Most of what's out there is for the marine aquarium and talking about reduction of nitrogen and phosphorus and exporting that via skimming. There is a great article, I'll link to it, in an Oscar, as in the fish, website, which has a great write-up on autotrophic nitrifying and the heterotrophic practical aspects of them. In the context of maintaining Oscars, the fish, but their objective, their focus there is in reducing nitrogen and nitrate, basically, and phosphorus, but really nitrate to avoid water changes in the aquarium, because nitrate above certain levels can be toxic. I'm going to use the word, maybe toxic is a little hard, but not good for fish. So they are looking at, in this article, use of a deep sand bed to control nitrates, and bacteria being the main driver of that filter. That doesn't apply for us because we have a tank full of plants, and our plants like the ammonia that's being left in the water because nitrifying bacterias have been reduced. Our canister filters are great for maintaining a colony of these increasing heterotroph bacteria that eat organic carbon. I don't care about reducing nitrogen or phosphorus, so I don't need to export these bacteria through a skimmer. I'm okay with them staying in there, dying, and putting that nitrogen and phosphorus back into the water because my plants are going to take it up. So, not an issue. And out-competing some of these negative bacteria, such as cyanobacteria, is a good thing for us. Now, just a caution. I have read certain comments. I don't know if there's been studies made, but comments that increasing bacterial population in the aquarium could lead to bacterial infections in fish. I have not tested that at all. I have not seen it with my aquarium that has a few fish. But if you have larger fish, angelfish, discus, other fish, it may be an issue. Keep an eye on it. Normally, around the eyes, you'll see the bacterial diseases that will be there. I'm not sure if increasing bacterial population would increase these disease-causing bacteria and therefore create an issue for your fish. It may just be that by increasing heterotrophic bacteria that are not disease-causing would outcompete the negative bacteria, the disease-causing bacteria, meaning that your fish tank will be even healthier, sort of like having a UV filter or ozone or whatnot. So I don't know if that's the case, yet to be seen. So to close this topic, my point here today was to get you thinking, to show that experimentation in planted aquariums is key. There is no right way to do it. There are many ways to do it. You just need to understand the foundations of things, why we're doing certain things so that you can adapt yourself. In my case, I got lucky. I had vodka being dosed in when my CO2 stopped. And then I was able to determine what the heck happened and why did the plant stay healthy. And it resulted in me starting to think about and getting interested in, hey, we don't really explore very much on the freshwater side bacterial management. We're so focused on denitrifying bacteria and ignoring everything else that maybe that's not the right thing to do. Again, in a planted aquarium environment. Maybe that's not the right thing to do. And maybe we should think about carbon dosing as an alternative here. What I will do, and in fact, I will do that, is I will start to vinegar dose again for a while I'm supplementing CO2 via the pressurized system to see what that does. I'm interested to see, am I going to be getting too much CO2 in the water now? What I would expect, if my hypothesis is correct, is that, and I'll do it by way of my, I'll do it various ways, but drop checker, obviously, if I'm bubbling enough CO2 today that it remains green, and I continue that same bubble rate, but simply when I start to dose vinegar, after a while, if I see that drop checker turning yellow and I haven't increased the CO2 that I'm bubbling in, then something else must be happening that is increasing the CO2 content in that water, right? And we are theorizing, hypothesizing, that it is the respiration of bacteria, the increasing bacteria that the increased carbon, organic carbon in the water has created. So I'll report back on that. I think it's an interesting thing, but I would love to hear your thoughts. Feel free to disagree with me. Feel free to send me an email or post a comment to the show notes, which, by the way, are in scapefood.com/46, the number of this episode. And tell me I'm crazy. I don't know what I'm talking about. Just let me know why. Okay? If you've had any experience with this, let me know why. If you're knowledgeable in the area of these types of bacteria, I'd love to speak to you and really address this a little more. I'm putting together a research article that I'll publish on Scapefoo in the not-too-distant future specifically on this, but I felt it was a topic that would be of interest to you through the podcast and carries with it some lessons. Whether you agree with me or not, we can all agree that there's no one way to do this to have success, and that we should continue to think about and explore and push the boundaries. I think the saltwater folks do that very well. They have new technologies coming through almost every few years. We've been kind of stuck here in the planet side, on the freshwater side, right? We have some very antiquated things. They work, not that they're not working, but we're not seeing some new science and technologies coming out that that warrant some thinking. So I wanted to put it out there for you and solicit your response and your thoughts and get you thinking, okay? Again, at the end of the day, it's about providing our aquarium plants with what they need. I'm just using a different vehicle to do it, not a pressurized CO2 cylinder. So I hope you enjoyed this topic. I hope listening to me for this period of time has not been overly boring for you. I've tried to keep it interesting with the stories and my accidental experiment here. Again, send me an email, art@scapefood.com. If you have feedback, I'd love to hear it truly. Or if you just want to say hello, go ahead and do that. The Scapefoo app, very important for us here on Scapefoo. It allows us to continue to pay the hosting and all the expenses that we have here in bringing you Scapefoo and the Scapefoo podcast. You can find it via links in the show notes. Just go to scapefood.com/46. Or if it's easier for you, just go to the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store. Type in Scapefoo. You can download them. They're for your smartphones. They're there for tablets as well, whether iPad or whatever the Android version you're using. They're there for you. I do want to remind everyone that the Aquatic Experience is coming. It's in November, early November. In fact, I'll look up right now the exact dates. If you're listening to this before this date in November 2015, then this is for you. If you're listening to this afterwards, then ignore what I'm saying right now. So yeah, the Aquatic Experience is coming up November 6th through the 8th in 2015 in Chicago, Illinois. You still have time to get tickets and to get over there. I would highly recommend it. You're going to see aquascaping contests, all sorts of things related to the aquarium hobby. And you will have the privilege of being able to say hello to Esther Mouse of Aquvinova Plants. And that's the new aquarium plant line that is coming into the United States. They're announcing and launching at the Aquatic Experience. You'll be able to purchase some of them, I'm sure. Listen to Scapefoo episode 45, the last one, that we have an interview with Esther, and we talk about their Linea Zero and Linea In Vitro plants, which are fantastic for us here in the United States. We finally are going to have the quality of plants that those of you listening outside of the United States have had for many years. So hopefully this will spur the growth of the U.S. Aquascaping hobby and make it easier for everybody to have a beautiful aquarium, which is what we're all about. And by the way, I'm seeing the Aquatic Experience here on the website. Frank Reese of Blue Zoo Radio and TV is going to be the keynote speaker. That should be very interesting. He is an interesting, fun guy in the hobby. Also, speakers include Heiko Bleher. And sorry, Heiko, if I'm killing your last name. That's how I've always pronounced it. Oliver Knott, which is our famous pro aquascaper that we've had on the show via interviews before. I'm also seeing Julian Sprung, Charles Delbique, which are big in the aquarium hobby. And Julian is a fellow South Floridian. So, and Sanjay Joshi, which is a authority on LEDs. That'll also be a wonderful talk, I'm sure. So, highly recommend it if you can get out there and go. If you do, report back. You know, we have, there's well over 1,000 of you listening day in and day out, or episode in, episode out, and many more read our Scapefoo. So be a reporter, would you? If you're making it out there, unfortunately, I can't make it. I know JJ is. He's going to be doing his best. But if you're out there, share with us your experience. Send us an email. Send us pictures. If you can record anything, iPhone or smartphone, just hit that record button and give us your thoughts and experience. We'll put that on the air in one of the upcoming shows. Should be fun. So please do that. Please look for JJ if you're out there and say hello. He's easy to find. If you need a picture of him, just go to scapefoo.com. I think we have a couple of pictures there for you. So as always, thank you for listening. It is truly an honor and a pleasure to speak to you every day. Every day. I wish it was every day, every week. And I hope you're finding these entertaining and informative. Please continue to send us information on what you want to hear. That is vital. Vital for us, so that we're bringing you stuff you want to hear. Very simple. That's the way it works. Just send an email to art@scapefoo.com. If you want to hit all three of the hosts, send it to feedback@scapefoo.com, and the three of us will get that email. Lastly, just to plug again, and sorry to hit you again for the Scapefu app, I did fail to mention that as a thank you for the Scapefu app, you do get the Ask Art podcast. Now, the Ask Art podcast comes out every Wednesday and Friday. It is a short form podcast where I answer a question that you submit to me, either by email or by voicemail. And it's very short, it's very targeted, but it's a lot of fun for me. I really enjoy doing it because I can do a deep dive on one particular question that you have. And the feedback we've been getting is great. But it's only available if you have the app. It's a thank you for downloading the Scapefu app. If you want to submit a question that I would answer then on the air in the Ask Art podcast, all you need to do is go to askart.help. And there are all the instructions. So it's askart.help. Type that into the URL bar, and you can manage it that way. Just submit however you'd like, okay? So that's it for today. I hope it's been provocative. Remember to let me know what you thought, and have a great week. I'll be speaking to you soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Scapefu Podcast, where it's all about learning to make aquariums beautiful.